Funding for WBUR comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at mathworks.com.
Okay, I'm Ron Suskind, and I want to tell you about a new podcast I'm working on with Heather Cox Richardson, a brilliant historian at Boston College. Okay, we're creating a smart, nuanced look at the Trump administration using my decades of experience as a political journalist and Heather's sweeping knowledge of American history. Each week, we'll invite the best reporters and historians to give us their perspective. They'll join us, we'll talk, it'll be lovely. This podcast is in development now. Take a listen. Tell us what you think at wbur.org/iLab. That's wbur.org/iLab. Also, we're still looking for a name for the podcast. If you got an idea, let us know. Thanks for listening.
This American carnage.
We just got a tweet from the President of the United States.
By nominating Judge Neil Gorsuch.
He said, see you in court.
Do you respect Putin?
I do respect him.
Do you? Why?
Gave alternative facts.
And the promise we made to the American people is we're going to repeal and replace Obamacare.
Nobody knew that health care could be so complicated.
He is accusing former President Barack Obama of wiretapping his phones.
This administration is running like a fine-tuned machine.
I'm Ron Suskind, joined by Heather Cox Richardson, American historian extraordinaire. Hi, Heather.
Hey, Ron.
We have a fine guest today, Matt Bai, longtime cleanup hitter for the New York Times Magazine, now national political columnist for Yahoo News. How are you, buddy?
I'm good, thanks. That's a great intro. I'd like to be a cleanup hitter for somebody.
Hey, so Matt, we are fast approaching the end of the first 100 days of this Trump administration. I want to get your insights of this time that has passed.
You know, the truth is, I don't think the 100 days matters for very much. It's like one of these constructs that, you know, any of us who've ever started new jobs know that 100 days isn't very long to figure out, you know, have I gotten the onboarding in the benefits department and do I know where how the health plan works and how the phones switch over and all that. For this president and his team, that learning curve really is extra steep. I mean, love him, hate him, whatever, he has no idea what the presidency was about or how to tackle the job. And so I think most of his first 100 days on the job, with some isolated departures that were really momentous, like a successful nomination to the Supreme Court. I think most of these 100 days have really been about Trump transitioning, filling jobs, thinking about an agenda which he had not thought about in the campaign, and trying to decide what kind of president he wants to be and what exactly the presidency entails.
Heather, what are you seeing in this moment?
Well, I'm a little shocked at the idea that we should think of it as a transition, because we are talking about the president of the United States. You know, the president should have some clue of what he or she wants to do once that person is in office. And the fact that we should stand back and sort of say, well, you know, he's got to figure out where the light switches are, seems to me to be extraordinary. You know, I actually think there have been a lot of signs in this first 100 days from Trump that he hasn't accomplished very much, which itself is a sign. You know, he promised a lot of things to a lot of people, and he cannot deliver them because his party is so completely divided. But what he has done is he has illustrated, I think, that for all the talk about the fact he's going to be a populist president and he's going to help the little guy and all that, what he really has signaled in this 100 days, looking at it as a historian who might have to someday write a book about it, is that what he has done is really taken the platform of the Republican Party since at least the 1980s and put it on steroids. I mean, we have, after all of his comments about Hillary Clinton and Goldman Sachs, we have one of the richest cabinets in American history since probably, comparably only, really to the 1920s or the early 1890s.
It's interesting because, you know, certainly Trump, as often candidates become, was kind of a Rorschach for lots of people. You know, he says, what's the policy? Make America great again. I mean, what is that as policy, really? And so I guess part of what we're all thinking about is who the hell is the guy? What does he actually believe? None of us really knew that.
And I don't think, Ron, he knows. And I think what we're talking about, Heather, I mean, where we're having a slight divergence is there's the ideal and there's the reality. I can certainly agree with you that a president, a candidate ought to lay out a very clear direction for the country, although I would certainly argue that neither candidate in the race last year did that. And then you can certainly argue that a president ought to be qualified and know something about the White House and not wander around in awe for months. But this is the situation we face. And I think the question, to a certain extent, for all of us watching this presidency, but particularly for those of us writing about it, is are we going to let him do that, and should we? Right? Does he have the space to figure out what kind of president he wants to be, to figure out what his ideology is actually going to be once the sort of, you know, proverbial rubber hits the road? Or are we going to box him in and, you know, say, you said one thing and now you're saying another and you have no idea how to be president? Because to some extent, it's always in the interest of the country for a president to figure out the job and do it well. But I think there is a strong undercurrent of feeling among a lot of the media that were he to be successful in the job and figure it out, it would validate a whole host of ideas and values that we find repugnant, one of which is that you don't have to be qualified to come in and be a successful president. And I think a lot of us do and should wrestle with this question of how invested are we in his success? How much should we be invested in his success? And should we give him the room to figure out how to be a better president than I think he's been to this point or than he was, you know, really qualified to be?
Do you think there's room for him really to do that? I mean, it seems to me that in the first 100 days and before that, in the 70 years before that, we've had a pretty good sense that, in fact, he does have an ideology, and that ideology is that what's good for the country is what's good for Donald Trump.
I think it's more complicated than that. I mean, there's certainly signs of that. And that, what you just put your finger on, is to me the most disturbing trend in the presidency. I always feared, and I wrote about it several times, that he would do in the White House, quite naturally, what he had done in his entire business career, which is to essentially run it as a closely held family enterprise. And that, to me, threatens some very core democratic ideals. And it also, as you imply, makes it impossible to govern effectively. But I think there are other ways in which he can and might reevaluate. We don't know yet. I don't know what his capacity is. I've certainly been skeptical. But, you know, you look at what happened with the health care bill, where he came out and really came out very aggressively against this sort of Freedom Caucus and sort of the nihilist right wing of the Republican Party once he came to realize all of a sudden, hey, these guys make it impossible to govern. I didn't realize that before, right? But if Donald Trump woke up and decided he wanted to shake up the traditional alignment of partisan politics in America, he has the capability to do that. And I might even argue that if he doesn't do that in some way, that 35 to 40% approval rating is going to cement for him. He's going to become a very isolated figure because he really is a president without a party, or as close to being a president without a party as we have seen in modern history.
Look, think of it this way. We've got a pretty evenly divided country with mostly on both left and right lots of tired prescriptions for what might be done. Here you've got a man who pretty much arrives without principles that are in any way discernible. And as you say, Matt, I think rightly, without party, the Republican Party is just as upended as the Democrats at this point. Certainly,
maybe
after,
more so.
Yeah,
I think more so.
Even after his battle with the Freedom Caucus, well, that certainly left the Republican Party kind of in tatters. So then you sort of ask yourself, does this liberate Trump in a variety of ways to say, well, you know, teach me, what's the deal with health care? You know, oh my, that's complicated. I mean, in some ways, that might provide avenues for him to do, well, some sorts of improvisations, Maverick style, that get off the traditional left-right grid. So I guess that's a question that you asked, Matt, which I think is fascinating. If Donald Trump were to succeed, would half the country on the left or center, Hillary Clinton supporters, feel as though no matter how he did it, it was a loss for them?
Well, you know, I'd actually disagree on this one. I do agree with you that we are at a moment of extraordinary reworking of American politics. It is an extraordinarily exciting time in American politics. Both parties are in tatters. There is a ground roots movement out there trying to rebuild things, and it would be absolutely wonderful if the president jumped on board that and helped to redefine the country. I'm actually rooting for the man. I think I root for every president. It behooves all of us, I think, to be behind our leader and to try and make sure that the country does improve and does have a good economy, a good place in the world, all the things that we all want.
Thank you, Heather. Thank you.
But
you're wonderful. You're fabulous.
I do think right now the real excitement that I see, and the reason I think this moment is both an interesting one and a realignment moment and a very exciting moment, is that the pressure that I see is not coming from the president, who in fact has told us exactly who he is through his actions, if not through his words. He's slashing regulations. He wants this extraordinary tax cut. If you look at his actions and not his words, I think he's told you that he is, as I say, movement conservatism on steroids. But the people
except for one very big place you're alighting there, which is the role of America in the world, both economically and militarily. His America First, a largely isolationist viewpoint, is a radical departure from 20th century republicanism and from what would have been the Republican doctrine, 10 years ago. The idea of tariffs to the Republican Party would still have been anathema. The retreat from world leadership economically and militarily is not a side point. It is, I would argue, the most radical departure he represents from 100 years of American governance, and certainly from the long-standing platform of the Republican Party.
Yes, but it hasn't happened yet. I mean, the reality is he really going to be able to walk away from our agreements? Well, he is a man with whom I will watch what he does and not what he says. But the more important point to me in the last 100 days and where we have been is that we are seeing a level of popular protest that is, to my mind, absolutely unprecedented in American history. And you could make arguments about the 1960s and the 1890s and a bunch of other places that we could talk about. But this moment in the last 100 days since Trump's inauguration, you have a grassroots movement that is pressing American democracy more effectively than anything we have seen in generations.
Heather, it's true that certainly on the left, folks are realizing this democracy is a participatory sport. And I guess my question is, when was the last time you had a president arrive into office and summon this sort of vigorous public protest?
Well, it was the presidency that everybody comes to first whenever they think about American history, and that was the presidency of Benjamin Harrison.
Oh, of course. I mean, the stage play, I love that, and the musical they did. It's fabulous, yeah.
Everyone always forgets about Benjamin Harrison, and there's a reason for that. He gets written out of history, but it was a very similar situation. A person who came to office after a Democratic president, Cleveland, who was popular among people who wanted reform, wanted to make sure the government did not work just for the very wealthy. Harrison said that he would make some reforms, including to the tariff, did not win the popular vote, lost the popular vote by 100,000 votes. Gets put in with the Electoral College. As soon as he gets in, it's very clear that there's been hanky-panky going on. People are infuriated by that. They start to protest, and Harrison and his men keep saying, no, 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 we've got this. We know how to make America work again, how to bring the economy back, although it wasn't actually that bad right then. He puts his son into an important position and simply refuses to note that there is these protests going on, that people are literally starving out in the West. And he completely misses what's happening out West, which is, again, this huge protest that becomes the Alliance Movement of 1890, which takes over the House of Representatives by a margin of 2-1 that year and virtually flips the Senate. And Harrison is completely blindsided by it.
Right, and drives politics forward from that point. I mean, in a way, the reaction to Harrison becomes the defining thing of that
period.
That's
exactly right, and that's where we get the populist movement. And again, the progressive movement grows out of that at the turn of the next century.
Yeah.
I can tell you, it was tough to cover the Benjamin Harrison administration. They were not easy to deal with.
Well, I think
they treated me terribly.
I think Lin-Manuel's next play is Harrison. Yeah, it's lovely. I saw it in New Haven.
Let me posit this a different way, though. I mean, that's an interesting point that you raised, Heather, and I've been thinking about this. Any poll in America will show you that Americans want the health care plan passed under President Obama to remain and to be fixed and tweaked as necessary, and Washington is completely paralyzed. In issue after issue where the public speaks, whether it's through protests, whether it's through social media, whether it's through just sheer phone calls to representatives, Congress and the White House, and this has been true for some time now, it does not begin with this president, is unresponsive. There is a problem. There is something broken that I think, despite all the impressive protest and the impressive public engagement, and certainly at this moment we have a lot of it, there is a reaction That is not happening in Washington. That's happening in every other facet of American life.
But Matt, let me just say, you know, I hear you, but let me just say that it may just be not yet. I mean, because think about it, Donald Trump.
Right, Washington's always late.
But his very existence is a protest movement. I mean, the man is pushed up there by protest. In a way, what's fascinating to see is that for many, Trump is almost kind of a fantasy character, certainly on the right, of a guy with no experience. Part of what advertises him to them is his lack of experience.
That's right.
You know,
and his contempt for government generally.
You bet.
Everybody likes to knock politics and politicians and public servants, but governing is really, you know, there's a line from Hamilton, you know, where Washington says to Hamilton, winning is easy, son, governing's harder, right?
Yeah.
Governing's hard. And that contempt and that dismissiveness for people who devote their lives to it, I find very hard to bear. You know, I find it almost disqualifying. And I do think, you know, this is one of the places where President Trump is running up against a wall. And it's one of the reasons I've said I think this staff, you know, to speculate about who in the staff is coming or going is pointless, because this will not be his staff. This is what I mean by looking at the 100 days as a transition. This is a transition staff. Sooner or later, I think he is smart enough to understand, probably already, that somebody needs to know how to run the place and how to govern.
I guess the question is, what are each of us expecting, both in our dire nightmares and maybe our improbable hopes, for the next 3.5 years as to what might occur? What do you think, Heather?
I am absolutely fascinated. The big moment in American history that we're in right now is the extraordinary degree to which women, especially middle-aged women, have stepped forward to take part in American democracy and to protest Trump. And that is not an accident. I think the mixture of a man who has come to office under these circumstances with the kind of quotations and behavior that this man has delivered has sparked this extraordinary gender gap and movement activism among women that is really unprecedented in American history. I don't think it's going to stop.
That's an utterly original position, Heather, and fascinating. I mean, Matt, this is what you get when you get historians in here. They come
right
up with these
especially
things.
Especially middle-aged female historians.
Yeah, I know that just by coincidence. So, Matt, what are you thinking about next 3.5 years? What's your high side and downside?
3.5 years, huh?
It's a lot,
gosh,
baby. It's a lot.
I think he goes one of two ways. He either becomes very isolated, paints himself into a corner as a president. In other words, you know, he starts to be a drag on the midterm elections for Republicans. They get tired of the antics. Nothing's moving in Congress. They never liked him anyway. The bottom falls out pretty easily. Democrats are dead set against him, and he ends up, you know, very isolated from both parties and almost in the position of a traditional independent, like we saw Jesse Ventura in Minnesota, which is a story I covered many years ago. Everybody's out to get you, and he'll get primaried. But the other way he could go, I think, as I suggest, is he can be a quicker study than that, and he can essentially let the party establishment quietly have a larger role of a government run by people who know more about government. He establishes a pretty conventional White House, Republican White House, in which he can go around building the brand and building the family empire and doing his tweeting and running out to the press room when he wants and being almost a figurehead.
Look, I swing around between impeachment, World War III, next 3.5 years, Kardashian White House, essentially, a weird maverick government with a lot of Democrats because he's surrounded by Democrats. Hell, he was a Democrat for years, with Republicans mixed in and best idea wins and things that are beyond imponderable. Either way, I think we're going to be discovering a lot over the coming months and years, certainly the next 100 days and the one that follows that. Thanks to Heather Cox Richardson, professor of American history at Boston College, and Matt Bai of Yahoo News. And thanks to you, listeners. Tell us your thoughts at wbur.org/iLab.